Welcome to Eat, Sleep, Wine, Repeat, a podcast for all you wine lovers who, if you're like me, just cannot get enough of the good stuff. I'm Yanina Doyle, your host, brand ambassador, wine educator, and sommelier. So stick with me as we dive deeper into this ever-evolving, wonderful world of wine. And wherever you are listening to this, cheers to you.
Hello, wine friends, and welcome back to part two with head sommelier Beatrice Bessie. Now, if you haven't caught part one, go back and have a listen. Beatrice is the type of person who you can tell pours her heart and soul into all of her endeavors. And I think this is what I love most about wine, listening to people about their wine journey in whatever capacity and hearing and feeling that passion. So that will continue in this episode as well, whilst we talk about Beatrice taking her Court of Master Sommelier exams, a recent trip to Australia, old vines, and the main theme of this episode, which is on the Italian wine regions, Alto Adige and Trentino. Now, imagine snow-capped mountains. Alto Adige is on the border of Austria and Switzerland. It is more Austrian than Italian, with two-thirds native German speakers. So we'll be talking about some of the indigenous grape varieties that grow there, such as Schiava and Lagrein. An interesting fun fact, 98% of Alto Adige's wines are released at least the DOC level, which is more than any of the other wine regions of Italy. Now, just below Alto Adige is Trentino. Now, I always think of the incredible traditional method sparkling wine producer Ferrari when I think of Trentino, but Beatrice has been to Alto Adige and Trentino several times, considering it one of her favourite wine regions. So I shall leave her to work her magic and inspire you all. Now, if you are enjoying these episodes and you have 2 moments free, don't forget, it helps the podcast massively if you can leave a rating or a review on the podcast app you are listening to. Right, if you guys are ready, let's go over to the chat now. Now, I want to take us to you taking your Court of Master Sommelier advanced exams, because there's several levels. They're not easy. They're a little bit challenging. And well, anyone who listened to part one will know that, you know, you're into challenges, you've taken on a lot, and you're amazing at achieving things. So how has that been doing your Court of Master Sommelier advanced?
I mean, advanced, I passed it in 19, and I remember it was, I don't know, the moment I passed was such an achievement, you know? It was probably one of the peak of my career, and I don't think I achieved the peak, actually, of my career yet, but at that moment, you know, the pressure was very high. You put yourself through a lot of sacrifices and a lot of, you know, I had my daughter was, how old she was? So in 2019, so she was 10 now? Yes. Wow. Nine. And I remember the night before she was reading me the flashcards.
Amazing.
I think I have a picture of her falling asleep on the pile of the flashcards.
Oh, the poor girl, but well, amazing that she helped you.
Yeah, she was like, Mom, no, I want to help you. No. And I mean, it was, I failed the first time in February, I think. And after 2 months, I decided to do it anyway, because it was just, I had a bit of a panic attack. So I knew I could do it. It wasn't that I was missing knowledge or I was just didn't manage myself in the right way. So I remember I didn't open any books for that 2 months. I just did a lot of meditation and...
Amazing. Okay.
Kind of a stress, kind of anxiety, yeah? And I remember I passed it, and I remember after you do the exam, you finish the 3 days. In the case of the advance, you called again.
3 days?
Yeah. So it's a 5-day exam, let's say, with 3 days of lessons and 2 days of examination. So you are there for 5 days. Okay. So 3 days where they ask you, they revise with you, blah, 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 blah.
Okay. So some last minute learning.
Not really. You cannot really, but they tell you, oh, this thing, you need to know it. That thing, you need to know it.
Okay.
Let's do a bit of, and there was like also some sessions of blind tastings together with a group of candidates. But if you are not ready, you're not going to be ready for those 3 days, obviously. So I remember it was a 10-month intense preparation before the exam with the 6-month counting the hours, you know, scheduled hour by hour every day.
And this is all self-study though, isn't it?
Yes, self-studied. I had a bit of a blind tasting group, but it's all self-provided, self-studied. Obviously, I was working back in time in 67, so I could ask questions to my colleagues saying, oh, what do you think about this, about that? Should I study that? Should I not? But it's a self-learning process.
But those 2 days then that are exams, 2 days, what is 1 day more the knowledge of wine and then the second day is more the practical pouring wine and serving to customers?
The first day of the examination, you do the theory. It's a written questionnaire. So it's a written paper. And so you do it all together. Now, I need to remember because it's 4 years ago. I think in the afternoon, you start to do the blind tasting. Yes. Yes, you do the blind tasting. So you are called in a room by yourself with 2 or 3 master sommeliers.
Oh, not intimidating at all.
Not at all. Not at all. So you are in a closed room. So they run 3 or 4 people at the same time, you know, just, you know, depending on the space they have, in which hotel we are, blah, 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 blah. And so you have 6 wines to be described orally, verbally, in 25 minutes, calling the grape variety and the region and the vintage too. The day after, you have the practical, where you have basically a scenario of a restaurant. You have 3-4 tables. Every year can change slightly, and you have some service to be done with questions, but definitely decanting, service of a sparkling, and so on. And you call back in the second day, so in the afternoon when you've done the 3 parts, you call back again for the result communication. So you're called again individually. You're called in front of one master. And I remember I have a video of it because Ronan back in time was my boss. And obviously he didn't approach me at all for that exam. And he was behind me recording my reaction. I didn't see him at all because I was like, oh my God, I cannot do this anymore. I want to pass. So one of the other master sommeliers gave me the answer and he was like taking his time, obviously, like, so how do you feel? And how was last time? Why did you fail? Because why did you not pass the advance last time? What was the issue? And I said, yeah, I had a bit of a panic attack, kind of. The blind tasting part and blah, blah, blah. Ah, so how did you feel this time? Like, I don't know, I feel confident. Yeah, this time you passed the tasting.
And I'm like,
and now I'm like, okay, but did I pass the other parts? Because if you don't, you failed the exam. So you cannot, you know, save one part or the other or so. You know, another 5 minutes, I was like, oh, please tell me.
Oh, hurry up and tell me.
Can you just tell me? I want to die. So obviously I passed and I started to cry and Ronan was taking video of me from behind and I was like, ah, look at you, look at you. And I lost my phone. I didn't know where my phone was because I was like all thinking about the exam. And actually I left the phone back at home. So I didn't see it for another 1 hour or two. And Ronan posted the video on the WhatsApp group of the sommelier in 67 and everybody was laughing about me. Anyway, it was
in a good way.
I mean, honestly, probably was the better night of sleep I had in years after that. I remember I had a bottle of champagne to celebrate myself, a nice bottle of champagne that night for dinner, and I just collapsed.
Passed out
on my bed. Yeah.
Beautiful. That sounds gorgeous. So I love that. Now, I want to take you on a wine trip again. So for people listening, they can get inspired. And I know you said to me recently, you just had the most amazing trip in Australia. So why did you tell me that one of your best trips that's coming to mind right now is Australia? Who did you go with? Where did you actually go in Australia?
So we spent 2 weeks in Australia, 1 week in New South Wales, across all the GIs, all the appellation, the most important appellation. And after we crossed border and we moved to South Australia and we did 1 week in South Australia. So amazing, amazing trip organized. So the trip is called James Busby trip.
James Busby. That's for anyone who doesn't know, he's the Scottish guy, ironically, who brought all the grape varieties across. And I assume you must know he is buried in a cemetery somewhere in London.
I didn't know that.
Ah, so I think South London. But anyway, everyone, I'm sure you can Google it. Yeah.
All right. So the trip is called James Busby. He's organized from a master of wine by himself, you know, that is based in London, obviously. Unfortunately, that was the last trip of the last 14 years. He organized the trip almost every year, sometimes twice per year. And yeah, so I was very privileged to be invited to this trip for 2020. And obviously, as you can guess, didn't happen because of COVID. So I was like crying all the year, probably. And finally, it could happen last year. So we went at the end of October till the beginning of November. So it was amazing. I mean, I knew that would be the best trip of my life. And it definitely didn't disappoint.
Who's the master of wine who organizes this?
Tim Wildman.
Oh, okay. Tim Wildman. Oh, my God. Well, okay. For anybody, I've actually spoken with him and he said he will come on the podcast at some point when he's not so busy.
He's doing wine as well. He's making wine as well between UK and Australia. So he keeps traveling back and forth. You know, it's a very busy person, but it's such a personality. And we talk about the trip, on the trip and after the trip, quite a lot of time, you know, and we met a lot of people, you know, obviously these kind of trips, you know, you're meeting people that you never met before most of the time. And, you know, you make connections and so on, you know, coming from different countries in the world. Think about, you know, the connection that you make. And also we just realized during the trip that Tim shared his friend's connection with us. It wasn't like, okay, from 8 to 9, we are here. From 10 to 11, we are there. Blah, 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 blah. Guys, ask your questions and go. Was more about, okay, I know this winemaker since 15 years when I was traveling by myself, backpacking in Australia, and we became friends. Now we are family. Sometimes I sleep here. And so it makes everything completely different. You know, we felt part of a group, of a family.
I think for anybody who loves wine, has always thought about getting in the industry, you have to. It's like this story that you're telling me now and many of my own personal stories. You enter a world that is almost only for the wine trade, which is this combination of hospitality and people's homes and people's cultures and foods and experiences and behind the scenes and going places that the richest of people wouldn't pay for because it just wouldn't be there on offer to them. And you come away with something so special deep in your heart.
That's why you cannot leave it afterwards. That's the problem.
Yeah, totally.
You start to feel these emotions and this connection. And after, how can you leave it? You know, it's not about knowing. I mean, obviously, from my perspective, it's all about knowing and having the knowledge and having the power to, you know, to understand and to get the hang of it after years and years and years and years of experience and trying and still not there 100%. You keep going and you keep going and you keep having new things, new appellations, new regions and new discoveries, but also the beauty of connections and traveling and people that you met along the way and they become, oh, we met a few times and, you know, we taste your wines already and I'm going to list your wine because I like it and because it represents who I am too. And I remember your land and I remember how you take care of your land and how you take care of your children. And I remember your dog and whatever it was, you know, this is, and we had sorbet made with wine in the freezer and That's what it's about.
Now, that does not surprise me on a Tim Wildman trip, because for anybody who doesn't know, he makes these awesome pet gnats and he makes pet gnats in Australia. And one's called Piggy Pop. I mean, like he doesn't take himself seriously, but the wines are serious. And I met him when he was first showing the first vintage in England, the pet gnat. I think it's called Lost in a Field. And the reason I want him on this podcast at some point is because he is rescuing as many old vines or unknown vines in England. And he's got a great project getting people to kind of work together as a community. And then it's like hacking away, cleaning up the land, you know, to clear out a vineyard so people can start making grapes from it. And then he camps. Everyone camps under the stars. So you don't get paid, but you get this incredible experience and then you eat and drink and camp. And I'm just, he's a very inspiring man. Oh, so I kind of semi can understand why that was a beautiful experience for you.
Yeah, we had everything, you know, from historical producers made in a classic style to, you know, of course, obviously, we visited some of the oldest vineyards in the world that are planted in Australia, you know, the oldest planting of Grenache, one of the oldest of Shiraz and so on. Some of the actually modern one, you know, ungrafted. So the beauty of the land to the beauty of the people, you know, the connection with the historical family to new upcoming producer. Natural one making style, you know, orange, pen nut, to classic, to full rich style, to light. The food scene is absolutely incredible. We went squidding one day, so fishing squids.
Oh, I was going to say, what's squidding?
Squidding, yeah, that's what they say. Squidding. So we woke up one morning when we were in South Australia and we went, I think we woke up at 5 a.m. We went with a boat, with few boats on the ocean, and we just tried to fish some squid. And we had squid for lunch afterward. Anyway, it was incredible, you know.
Where did you go for the oldest finds of Grenache?
Oh, la, la. Oh, wow.
Did you go to quite a few?
No, we had Marco Cirillo. Marco Cirillo is a producer that has some of the
he
most...
He has Semillon as well. He has some really old Semillon vines, right?
Obviously, yeah. I do have a bottle at home.
Oh, of course.
Because I couldn't really think about, don't come back home with without a wine. And stupidly, every time I do this kind of trips, coming from not a very super rich background, you know, I started to have these opportunities to travel outside Europe. Not long time ago, I crossed Europe, the European continent, the first time just two years ago. And when I went to Australia again, didn't think about it, taking a bit
the
of
suitcase.
A space in the leg.
Yeah.
Well yeah. done. Yeah. Every time I forget this, stupid of me, but I did that. A bit of space, and one of the bottles I brought back with me was the Grenache 1850 from Marco Cirillo. One of the best Grenache you can taste in your life, and also the connection with him. You know, you can see that he truly cares about his land and about the passion that he has. And you know, the vineyard is incredible; it's so beautiful, and his wife is incredible. They are a lovely couple. They love each other so much, and you can see that. And they hosted us in their winery, and it was an amazing dinner time, you know. But I mean, every day was an amazing day. It was so hard to pick one day. It was impossible to pick which day would be the best out of all
of them. I can imagine. And yeah. Was it Langmuir Winery or Langmuir Estate? They're the ones with the oldest Shiraz vines. Is that where you went for the oldest Shiraz vines?
We have been there. Yeah, absolutely. We have been there too. We also have been to other plot of, yeah, Semillon as well from Marco. We had some other older plot of Grenache. So it was, yeah, everywhere, you know, especially in South Australia.
Old vines.
Old vines, yes.
Are spiritual. It's a spiritual experience. They make you feel something different when you're in a vineyard with the chunkiest, gnarliest.
I mean, especially if you are in this industry for a reason, you know, you're not doing this, you're doing this for passion. Every time you go in these places and you see these people, it's the most beautiful, you know, you feel accomplished in a way, I don't know, and connected to the mother earth.
Connected, it's connection.
Connected, and also we cried so many times, I cannot believe it, how many times we cried in that trip, like about connections, you know, people were moving us, people were telling us, you know, about their stories and about the way they try to save the land and the way they try to apologize to the ancestors, to the Aboriginal people. Obviously, the wine industry is very connected to it, you know, because the farmers are the first people to see the changes, you know, in the climate change, in the environmental issues, because they are the first affected by it. We are living in a town, unfortunately, we have 1 week of hotter weather. Oh my God, we complain. They are the first people to see firsthand what actually we are doing to the mother nature, and connecting back to the land is the only solution. Absolutely. And it was a wine trip, but it was a friendship trip, and it was also a cultural trip. And you discover again that you are ignorant in a way, that you don't know Australia, because I've never been there and I'm not from there. And you cannot know these kind of things if you don't go there.
I love it. So now you are very passionate about your latest trip, but I am going to bring you back to your homeland, because when I asked you again, what are the regions that you really like to talk about? You said Trentino Alto Adige. So we're going now to the northeastern part of Italy. So why do you love this region up in the mountains?
Because I think this is one of the regions that probably deserves most recognition. And it's a unique region regarding style, regarding winemaking, regarding personality. And again, has not been, if we want to do a comparison with Sicily, has not been recognized with any highest top tier appellations yet. And it's crazy to think that.
That is true. Yeah.
Probably down to the historical site of the region where you have a lot of fragmentation. The way the country, the region is made is definitely fragmented. You do have kind of a two region within the region.
Well, yeah. So what do you feel? Because actually very often gets put together, but Trentino is south, Alto Adige is in the north. And actually, like two thirds.
It is the reality of Italy, yeah. You know, especially. So Italy, we do have certain regions that are autonomic region, we call them. So geographically speaking, and also for the government side of things, they have the 100% autonomy to do their own rules. They have most of the time a double language that is their regional and national, let's put it in that way, language. So regarding Alto Adige especially, they have a Germanic language. That's the official language. So, I mean, that part of Italy has been unified with Italy only after the First World War. So a very recent situation. And family there are considering themselves Germanic still now. You know, they have Germanic surnames. They speak German at school, Austrian German at school. And yeah, at the end of the day, they are part of Italy. But I would say Trentino is definitely a bit more Italian in a way. It's a bit more connected to Veneto and Friuli Venezia Giulia, but mainly Veneto. It's like a prolongation of Veneto in a way. You start to see a shift, obviously, in food and everything and in wine culture. But Alto Adige is a completely different organism in a way for wine and especially for the culture. Connect to the fact that there is a Germanic culture there.
So do you find Alto Adige is the place that excites you a lot? I mean, it's a very continental but alpine-like region, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of time there before I was in the wine industry. So obviously for food and skiing reason.
Nice.
It's one of the most beautiful area you can travel, you can visit in Italy. Not maybe the most famous area if we go down to wine, you know, down in Italy. But I think if we will be able to promote and to support Sicily as much, I think Trentino Alto Adige should be the next one in line, because they deserve, you know, the quality is up there. They have amazing wines, mainly white, but there is a nice red also community, red production. And the wines are incredible. So, yeah.
The whites, obviously, lovely and aromatic, and maybe we'll touch on them. But I want to pick your brain about the reds, because we have two grape varieties from here that people might not have heard of, which is Schiava and Lagrein, if I'm pronouncing correctly.
Lagrein, would you like to correct
that? Okay, good. So let's talk about that, because again, in the last episode, we talked about Frappato, an amazing light variety that can be red, or the wine Ceresuolo di Vittoria that you could chill down and enjoy in the summer. But Schiava, it's this lovely red cherried rose petal. I think actually, don't they call it the cotton candy? The cotton candy grape.
Yeah, it is. It is. You could do a comparison again, but I would say probably both of them you could start to think that they're quite easy and approachable. But I think Lagrein has a more kind of a spicy and earthier style. down to the producers, down to the wine making. But I would say Schiava, it tends to be a bit more paler in color. It tends to be a bit more juicier in color, or juicier in profile. Schiava, I would say, you know, it's probably the daily drinking. It's probably the easier, approachable wine, down to the nuances of the producer and how you want to interpret that wines. But Lagrange definitely has a bit more mineral, earthy backbone to it, but both incredible, incredible great varieties.
And I've had Lagrange where it's been in oak, so it's, you know, a much more age-worthy example. Whereas actually, and this is where I wonder if you can just shed some light, Schiava, the only Schiava I've ever had, has just been a much more kind of fun, light, fresh style. So I don't, is it a great variety that anyone is trying to put in oak?
I would say out of Italy. So we are coming, you know, we are in London. I think Lagrange is getting a bit more recognition at this stage. It's a bit more spread around. Probably again, down to what you said, that you can see a bit of aging potential and you can see it's more well suited for oak. Schiava, it's probably the Dolcetto of Trentino Alto Adige, where you want to have a lighter, easier, juicier wine. I wouldn't mind it too. Actually, I never taste Schiava made in full New Oak. I wouldn't mind it to experiment with it.
Oh, really?
But I would say oak, it's definitely, at this stage, much more recognized, suitable for Lagrange. Because the tannins are quite grippy in Lagrange. So the oak can at least kind of soften the tannins and make it a bit more smoother. I remember back in time when I used to work in Italy, Lagrange was very fashion, upcoming, great variety by the glass. In every top wine bar, you had a glass of Lagrange. You can do some easy, juicy Lagrange, but the tannins are pretty much intense. So the oak aging is helping that out.
Well, yeah, I've always, with the few Lagranges I've had, there's also, and there's that spice, there's, like you said, I think you said the earthiness, there's a bit of a spiciness, a black pepper vibe going on in the mixed berries. But yeah, okay, so I'm sad that Lagrange obviously had a time and then seems to have disappeared a bit. It didn't make it through.
It's down to the fact that we are so confusing as a country. How many grape varieties can you list about Italy? Do you want to list all 650 out of them? I mean, how much space do you have for Italian wines? So that's the con of Italian wine, you know? We have so much variety and diversity that it's hard to choose, you know? Even for myself, you need to make decisions. So you need to think about how many bottles of wines from Italy you can list. How many is an Italian wine list? Go for it. List all of them. List Schioppettino, Schiava, Dolcetto, Freisa, Barbera, Maranello Mascalese, whatever you need, you know, Montepulciano d'Abruzzo, Sangiovese, Nebbiolo. You have space. But again, down to being an internationally acclaimed town, you know, where competition is very high and you want to please at least the majority of your consumer and your guests, and then demand is definitely mainly with international and after with the quirky, you know, after with the secret gems, the hidden gems. Absolutely, Italy is very prone to lead the way regarding secrets, regarding things that you cannot know, things that, you know, you might never tasted before, even if you're Italian. But it's hard, again. It's not because Lagrange doesn't deserve the space. It's because there are so many that down to a macro picture, it's hard to pick all of them apart. But I would say if I need to list, I mean, I am doing it right now. So if I need to list red wine from Trentino Alto Adige, I have Merlot and I have Lagrange in my wine list.
Well, that kind of also then shows what are the most planted, the most known, probably potentially the most consistent.
Yeah.
And yeah. Surprise everyone, there's Merlot.
Yeah, there is. I mean, that area, you know, Friuli Venezia Giulia as well, you have amazing representation of Merlot. Definitely, you say that area of the country is mainly white dominated and more famous for white production. Obviously, the weather, it's helping in that way. You know, it's a kind of a borderline situation. The winter is very cold and so on. But you do have some exceptional red grape varieties. mainly, again, few internationals and also some crazy grape variety that they are beautiful wines.
Well, I don't know. Is there any other indigenous reds that people should know about? Is the Terroir d'Ego grape actually worth, is it actually worth discussing?
Terroir d'Ego, yeah.
Oh, Terroir d'Ego. Because interesting, the reason I'm bringing that up is that I did a podcast on Brazilian wines several episodes ago, and that specific grape variety I discovered is growing over there now.
Wow. I didn't know that. Oh, wow. Everybody wants to be us, you know? That's, of course. You cross the street and you have an Italian restaurant, obviously.
Who doesn't love pizza and pasta? Come on.
Come on. Everybody's copying, you know. No, I mean, jokes aside, but I think, I mean, Terroir d'Ego, yes, is one of the other native variety or autochthone varieties from the area. And it's pretty much restricted in a flat area that is Rotagliana. You do have some few samples here and there, but Terroir d'Ego is mainly in this kind of area between San Michele and Mezzo Lombardo. So it's like a flat area within the mountain range that looks upon the mountain range. And it's again another quite tannic, I would say a la Grand Plus.
Well, I suppose it's even grippier and deeper colored, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. You definitely put some oak there. There are some natural producers there as well that are taking a different lead. But you definitely do. There are a lot of classic wine making where you put oak and you try to age it a bit, settles down the tannins, ready to be bottled and so on. So yeah, amazing, another amazing, powerful, red, rich, quite dense in color, quite concentrated that you can enjoy from the area. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, as you keep on saying, it's all about the whites. And I'm like, tell me about the reds. But for... But for the whites, am I right that it is kind of Pinot Grigio and Gewürztraminer?
Oh, no. Okay. For me, the best grape variety, I mean, I'm a big fan. I mean, all of that, you have a Germanic influence, let's say, of Sauvignon, of variety that they like to be in the cold. So Sauvignon, Riesling, Riesling Italico, or Welsh Riesling, if you want to call it. You definitely have aromatic varieties of Gewürztraminer. You have amazing range of Moscatos that are Moscato, pink Moscato and yellow Moscato that are mind-blowing. I think I have a bottle of Moscato Rosa, so pink Moscato, Passito, so sweet wine, in my cellar in Italy. And I hope my mom didn't find it, because if she found it, it's gone. Beautiful, beautiful. I mean, I used to collect only sweet wine and fortified when I was in Italy. I don't know why, that was my quirk. And now, obviously, yeah, I have Riesling from Germany. I have a bit of Barolos, obviously. That was an exception.
That was, okay, yeah.
That was the exception, yeah, of course. But I have so many sweet wine and fortified all across coming from Italy. And I still have this amazing Moscato Rosa probably there. I hope so. But yeah, and also I'm a massive, massive fan of all the Pinot Blanco expressions. So there is a lot of community, let's say, and a traditional blending wine in the region. So the wines are a lot of time blended or field blend because of the
history
of the region.
Well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you are on the mountains. The areas are very fragmented. You have a bit of vines there, a bit scattered across. You have two vines growing with that family and three vines growing with that family. And basically the top producers or the most well-known producers, what they do, they collaborate, they're creating collaborations for many generations, and they harvest and take care of the grapes coming from that family and that family. So most of the time you find this kind of a field blend, Pinot Blanc, so Pinot Bianco, Chardonnay, Sauvignon, sometimes Gewürztraminer as well. And they're incredible wines, absolutely.
Then actually, in a way, would it be fair to say that the white styles typically of, say, Alto Adige, high acidity, fresh, and that kind of nice aromatics, perhaps not as crazy aromatic as if you're having a Riesling on its own or a Gewürztraminer, but you're going to have that pretty floral freshness, right?
You do have that as a, yeah, one of the styles, absolutely. One, probably the most known. You have this kind of a nice acidity, nice kind of a orchard, primary fruit with a nice aromatic layer to it. But also you do have some wines that are, you know, age worthy and aged in oak, mainly old oak, I would say. But you do have some Austrian or Slavonian oak used in there. And you do have wines that, you know, you wouldn't bet they would be able to age. And actually, they are incredible wines and they can age for 20 years and so more. So, yeah, it's a mixture of everything. Absolutely. You find some Grüner Veltliner there. You find some Kerner. You find this kind of Müller.
Yeah, Kerner.
Yeah, Kerner that you're like, probably again, down to Italy was probably the go-to wine by the glass when I started to work.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no one we had Kerner everywhere, you know.
For anyone who doesn't know, when I was looking up and making sure that I knew my grape varieties before the episode, Kerner is a crossing of Schiava and Riesling.
How crazy is that? I mean, they change a bit of time again. It's like Müller-Thurgau. We kept changing parents. But yeah, yeah.
This is what they think right now.
Yeah, yeah. And Kerner sometimes, I mean, you underestimate a variety, you know, you think about, yeah, it's just an easy to drink, pretty easy variety, blah, 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 blah. And after you taste some Kerner from outstanding producer, a simple wine doesn't mean there is not a quality wine. You have this bright green apple flavor to it, this bright orchard. You're thinking actually you're having an apple juice and you, with a bit of alcohol and this bright acidity, it makes everything, you know, incredible. You know, thinking about to have some cheese with it, I would be so happy right now to have it.
Okay. So again, another great variety people should know about. So if people are going to come to the Trentino region or Alto Adige, I mean, what would be your recommendation? Is there one spot that is your favorite that people have to go to?
As a town, as a restaurant, as a...
You know, to just explore the area, you know, I mean, I guess like, I mean, Alto Adige has seven sub-regions, but...
Probably I would start with Trento and Bolzano as a town. You know, they are amazing, beautiful, beautiful, romantic towns, even in the winter. You have amazing food markets there as well that are running across. You have also some events, especially around Bolzano, that are running in the same kind of time as Vinitaly. So in the same kind of period. So, you know, there is not only Vinitaly to be seen and to be taken care of, you know, regarding wine fairs. And there you have in Bolzano and Merano, another beautiful town, full of history. You know, you really feel this kind of a mountain feeling, you know, you have a lot of Baita style, you know, this kind of a wooden houses and so on. The food is very warming, your soul, rich kind of simple food, but at the same time, beautiful, full of flavors, you know, cheese, old grains and potatoes and, you know, beautiful, you know, I mean, oh my God, I would eat every, I wouldn't stop eating if I was there, but... And also, I would say that all the Südtirol or Alto Adige is probably the area where I would go to, you know, going to small wineries and going to, you don't have to go to fancy restaurant in Italy to be happy. Obviously, you do have amazing restaurant there. There is the real region for comfort food. If you don't know comfort food, you don't know why we say comfort food, you go there for the first time in that region. Probably I wouldn't go. I mean, I like to go there for winter time. I think it makes all more sense, but summertime is beautiful as well. But you go there in the winter time with a bit of snow and you just cozy up yourself with a glass of wine and a bit of cheese and some canederli or some strudel. Oh my God, I love strudel so much.
Love it.
And I mean, back in time, I used to go there for a lot of skiing and, you know, I was competing in these kind of things back in time.
Oh, wow.
When I was much younger. So, but yeah, that's the comfort food region. That's what what Trentino Alto Adige is all about.
Love it. Okay. That's inspiring. If you like food and you like wine and skiing, get up north into the Trentino Alto Adige region. Oh, and we should just point out, you mentioned Sud Tirol. I've had that issue where people go, hang on a minute, I thought you were talking about Alto Adige. And it is the same region, isn't it?
Yeah, the region has an autonomic regulation, basically, kind of government in a way from Italy. So they are actually fluent and in both languages, German and Italian. And also is in Alto Adige, so in the northern part of Trentino Alto Adige, is the official language is actually German. So they have every single street name, every single town is actually, or region or sub-region, also in the wine laws side of it, is written in German too. So Südtirol is the Germanic name of Alto Adige.
There we go. So to sum up this episode, I want to just, I think you've already slightly answered it, but you know, with wine, there is the history, there is the complexity, there's the culture, there's also the emotions that come with it. So I just wonder, is there one specific thing that has gripped you more? What is wine to you?
Emotions, absolutely. I think emotion is the big thing that doesn't make you leave this industry. I think, you know, the discoveries that you go through because of your emotions, you know, the connection with people is probably the most important thing.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate your time. Honestly, you know so much, and it's been really lovely to hear the passion and the emotion and the feeling that you have behind all wine and all wine regions.
Thank you.
And we will speak again soon. So thank you.
Thank you as well.
Now, with the warmer weather, I am definitely going to track down some Schiava to have slightly chilled. And with my glass, I will raise it and give a big cheers to my incredible sponsor of this season, Wickham Wines. Don't forget, if you are in the UK and want 10% off your first order, just use the code EATSLEEP10. And I shall leave a link to their website in my show notes, along with also a link to the transcript. So don't forget, with all these Italian words, if you download the transcript, you can read along or you can search a little bit further those wine regions and the wine grapes. Now, next week, I am talking with Master of Wine, Justin Howard Sneed, who is going to teach us more about regenerative farming. So he teaches an introductory 2-day regenerative viticultural course. And so we're going to be discussing, why is it important? What actually is it? How does it differ from organics or biodynamics? And discussing a very hot topic right now in terms of viticulture, to till or not to till. So you do not want to miss this episode. Now, to finish off, I shall leave you with an Italian proverb, and it is buon vino fa buon sangue, which means good wine makes good blood. Basically, a glass a day keeps the doctor away. I'm sure that is the saying over here. Now, thank you as ever for tuning in, for listening, and hopefully learning and increasing that absolute desire to discover the next best bottle. Wishing you a week of energy, of success, and of course, beautiful wine and food experiences. Until next Monday, wine friends, cheers to you.